Yo, my apes, penguins, degens, and yunts. It's your host, Rogue Itachi, back with another episode of the crypto podcast. So incredible. Tupac came out of hiding in Cuba to come to my house and tell me how much he loved it. We're back with the seventh installment of Goodwill Yunting, and I guarantee it's going to be a fun one. As always, Goodwill Yunting is the crypto podcast for degens by degens. We are here not with financial advice, but to offer Goodwill Alpha on all the best projects, people, and communities to DYOR on or pretend to, and then just yunt into. Various members of Yunt Capital will hop on each episode to explore a crypto, NFT, or DeFi topic. Our brilliant yunts, combined with our big brain guests, create a podcast you cannot afford to miss. Today, we have a guest that I am super, super, super excited to have on. We're talking to a lead developer in two of the most interesting protocols in the space right now, Popsicle and Abracadabra. But not only that, every time I hear him speak, I just about piss myself from laughter. He's such a degen. We are super lucky to be joined by one of the biggest and smartest of apes, Danny. And joining me from Team Yunt is Seth, the professor himself. Welcome to you both.
Good to be here.
Hello, sirs. Hello, everybody. Hello, the degens. I'm so happy to be on this podcast because it's the only thing that is probably worth listening for apes like me and IQ 69. So that's pretty much what I can actually do on my car while I'm driving around like a like a true Italian honking everywhere.
So. Thank you. Appreciate that, Danny. Now, can you start by giving us a brief intro into who you are, your background, and then maybe you can talk about how you got into DeFi and became a developer here in the space?
Yeah, so I always say that I'm just a random lucky guy. And I can tell you a little bit my story on how I got into Bitcoin and how it ended up being a tattoo on my middle finger, because that's pretty much what is more interesting for the apes than all the rest of the story. But it was painful. But
Bitcoin tattooed on your middle finger?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, so when you give people the finger, you're actually giving them great financial advice.
Exactly. That's what they do with bankers usually. They think, excuse me, sir, but your account, because of compliance reason, has been terminated. So I have right there my tool to show my appreciation.
I love it.
So in 2011, I was just doing some world construction, 3D world construction on a metaverse that was Second Life. It's very interesting that these metaverses now are coming back, but on Second Life at the time, you had Linden dollars as the metaverse currency, and a lot of people was making actual businesses on Second Life. There was millions of users, and it was pretty cool, pretty neat. And I am, by the way, an architect for everybody that wants to know. I studied architecture, and I'm an architect and a designer by university. But at the time, I was doing this 3D modeling stuff, and it was pretty fun. And a client of mine, at a certain point, needed to pay me for a world that I did for him. And he says to me, like, yo, dude, you know, I don't want to change these Bitcoins into Linden dollars because... in our community, in the Bitcoin community, we want to pay everything in Bitcoin. I'm so like, I want to pay you in Bitcoin. You need to look at this. And my first impression, I mean, I was young, I was poor as fuck. And I'm like, if people would have paid me like in cheese, I would have accepted cheese. Like, didn't matter. You know, I was like, okay, this fucking Ponzi, whatever it is, I'm going to get some money out of it. You know, like, like I'm going to take it. Then I was like really, really sad because it took me like, it took me so long to run a fucking Bitcoin node, dude. I was a total ape at that moment. I was like, I need this Bitcoin node, and this guy was sending me all this forum shit, how to set it up, and I was running Windows like with a Pentium 4 or something like that. And at the time, I had this computer, which I had like an actual big fan, you know, like the fan that you use for just cooling your room, right? And it had the case was open at the side, and they had the actual fan next to it. I remember I just now remember that time. And what was happening there is that I run this finally after like a day or two trying to fuck around with it, and I was super scared. I run my first Bitcoin node, and I received my first Bitcoins as a payment. And that kind of kickstarted my journey into crypto. And I dumped it all, by the way.
Of course, of course. It's funny, every single story I hear of people getting into crypto, and especially people getting into crypto super early with Bitcoin, it's like, yeah, and I like Bitcoin a lot. I was really interested in it. I thought it was amazing. And then I dumped it all, and now I have like none from that time. It's funny how that works, but you know, it got you here. So
yeah, I mean, I still have some Bitcoins from that time, but right after digging it, right? But I dumped it like not any any close to the amount of freaking Bitcoin that this guy sent me, dude. Like I wouldn't even be on this podcast if I kept.
Like, I see. So you're smart enough to keep some of it, but yeah, you still need some money at the time, and unfortunately, that would be a lot more money now.
Yeah, the Bitcoin pizza, nothing in comparison, sir.
So I'm curious, what were the inspirations or problems you saw existing in DeFi that led to you founding Popsicle and Abracadabra?
First of all, my journey into DeFi has started because for all the time that I have been in crypto, I have been always very open to new ideas. But at the same time, I have been always focused on inclusion, on opening up the financial system to people that were not able to or are not able to have a bank account or use money in an efficient way. So they need to spend a lot of money to be able to do simple transactions and stuff like that. And that's why I'm very connected to Bitcoin, and I really like Lightning Network and stuff. But the interesting part of DeFi is that for the first time, I looked at it and I was like, oh, this is so interesting because this can be a full suite of possibilities, just like in a real bank account, right? Like in a real financial application or whatever. You can really start to think of doing so many things that it might become even better than the traditional financial system. And that's what really took me on DeFi, because with Bitcoin, of course, you can't really do all that stuff. And full disclosure, 2011 was not the only time that I dumped something. I dumped a lot of ETH in 2016 during the DAO hack, because I was one of those guys that was like, oh, fuck ETH. I'm a super, super Bitcoiner now.
A Bitcoin maxi? Oh, man, I can't imagine that.
Yeah, super Bitcoin maxi, dude. Like, next level. And but because at the time, all Bitcoiners pretty much liked Ethereum, I have to be honest with you. Like, we all liked it. But the DAO hack, I think, kind of divided the community still to these days. Anyway, DeFi was kind of like a wake-up call for me to on Ethereum again. And it made me fell in love with building things again. So that's why I kind of came back. And the problem that I saw looking into all this application was that everything was so fucking complicated, dude.
Like you need a freaking PhD in economics, you know, to be able to use most of the applications. And I see so many components, so many Legos, but there is no, like, there is no person that is kind of putting these things together and make sense of it, right? And I said, I want to be that person. I want to be the Lego player here. And I want to make sure that all these Lego are put together in a way that makes sense for the users, no matter where the user is from, no matter what he can do or can't do, and make it so simple to join this revolution with making also the incentives very high. So making sure that he makes a lot of money. So there is enough incentive on one side to make income to the blockchain, this new customer or potential customer, and second, make it super easy to use to make sure that he gets that money out of all these beautiful Legos.
Absolutely. No, that makes a lot of sense. And it's funny, I've been trying to shill one of my cousins on DeFi recently and get him involved. And, you know, the thing he says is, I help him as much as I can, but he's like, you know, this is a lot. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to do. And I really do see that as the biggest barrier of entry at this point. But that leads me nicely into my next question too, with, let's start with Popsicle. Really at its core, it seems it's a protocol to optimize liquidity management across multiple chains. And with Sorbetto, it will optimize the DEX for you, manage your Uni V3 positions to receive optimal fees. Is this the best way to describe it?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that the things need to evolve into the descriptions, right? So in my opinion, right now, the communication that needs to be done is that it's a professional type of product brought to a wider audience, into DeFi native people, right? I think that this is like the step one of Popsicle Finance. I would say that what Popsicle Finance is the market maker of DeFi in a very, very, very simple way. So it optimizes the allocation of funds for becoming an LP or basically the market maker, and make sure that you take the opportunities as they should, and you're not losing any potential value out of the money that you have there.
So I wanted to ask a little bit more about Popsicle here. You know, as a Popsicle user, holder for a long time, I guess first thing I should address is, you know, we all know about the hack and it's been talked to death, and you guys have laid out a really, you know, I think good plan to pay everyone back over time. I think that's, you know, you've done a very responsible job there. And I saw, I think it was today or last night, a ping on the Discord that you guys are now officially working with Immunify. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I would like to begin to saying that if you don't try things, you know, you're never going to, like, lose, right? Like, I think that applies a lot in DeFi, especially in innovation. Like, it was, from the beginning, it was not easy to find auditors for our contracts, because it's a pretty complex stuff, and it requires the auditor to understand so many concepts between market making, Uniswap V3, that was something that it's very new, and a lot of new functions and a lot of new stuff. So from the beginning was really innovative, and it was very difficult for us to find security, but we did. And we made, I think, two audits plus a lot of peer reviews. As you know, I'm fortunate enough that they have a lot of friends in the industry, but looked like that it didn't, unfortunately, it didn't work. So we had a slot booked with Certora for September, which we are using now for formal verification. But we believed, and the community also said, that we were going to launch with two audits, and everybody was feeling pretty confident on it. We were feeling confident, and unfortunately, the bad thing happened. So this is kind of like a little bit of the background there. Still, I believe that there is some sort of feeling of the by the hack, you know, kind of degen thing. But it's all the protocols that are currently the leading protocols in DeFi have been hacked at a certain point, even with audits and everything, because they try to do something new. And we are trying to do something new. So the path to that is complex. It's freaking blood and tears, sirs. And the reality is that sometimes you ask yourself how much worth it is. And I can tell you for certain that it is worth the blood and tears, because we are talking about one step at a time, shaping potentially the future of millions of people, right? So this is really cool.
And so, you know, so on top of the audits, you guys are moving to a dynamic bug bounty system, right?
Yeah, definitely. I like Immunify. I think at the end of the day, can I tell you something? I would take anything at the moment. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, is it good? Is it not good? It stacks on top, you know? Like, is Immunify good? I think so. Is it the best thing? I don't know. Is it the only thing that I would do? No, for certain. Like, I will stack everything that I find that can give me a higher chance of not being hacked again.
Awesome. That's good to hear. I think it's really reassuring, because you're right. Like, everything's, for the most part, been hacked or compromised or exploited in some way, and it is the nature of the game. And you talk a lot about, you know, the importance of Uni V3 positions and managing as the future, or one of the, you know, future avenues of DeFi. And I totally agree with you. And I do like the, you know, the Popsicle LP management for you system. But it seems that, like, we're still really early here and we're lacking quite a lot of efficiency. And it's not just with Popsicle. Everyone else is trying to do this, and including, you know, manual management. You know, I don't think it'd be a stretch to say we're only realizing probably close to 20 or 30% of what could be done with a truly optimized system. So do you have, like, big plans coming forward for how you automate this?
Yeah, so I think that now we talk a lot about the V3, but in reality, V3 is just a component of our strategies. It happens to be the one with the most volume at this point. So it's important. But I have done, you can check out on my Twitter, I have done a lot of threads about also optimizing given strategies on traditional AMMs, like V2 style AMMs, like Sushi and Uniswap V2. And there is a lot of potential, even without going as far as saying we need to set ranges, we need to build strategies for like optimizing V3. We need to really look into what market making is and what is market making into DeFi, and what are the opportunities there that we can bring up, and how can we present this opportunity in a very simple way to our users so they can take them. Like, and this is really what Popsicle is about. Like, I think another good example of what Popsicle is like Yearn Finance for liquidity. Or even I could stretch as much as saying that it could be like even a direct competitor to Yearn Finance, to be honest, specifically into strategies, because it can. I have strategies that do LP and utilize LP, but are definitely non-directional strategies. So it would be like a US dollar vault. So it could be very similar in a way, but the difference is here is what it actually does. So Popsicle Finance look at the market in a more hedge fund style way, like high frequency hedge funds and strategies and options. It looks really at the total of what is happening into DeFi and tries to capture the value that exists already there, putting it together into one single strategy. Then why beginning with liquidity liquidity provisioning is because liquidity provisioning is undervalued, but is also underdiscovered. Like, we see a lot of liquidity everywhere on Uniswap and Sushi, but is this liquidity efficient? I don't think so. Like, we have, with our partner Blockchain Research Lab, we have looked deep and deep into all the movements, all what is happening with this parked money. And we realized that it could have done so much better. And what is the market of liquidity provisioning? Like, it's massive. Like, if the if you think about it, it's bigger even than lending, borrowing and lending. So the opportunity here, it was massive, and that's why I decided first to focus on liquidity provisioning and strategies on liquidity provisioning, because really there was nobody at the level that, or at least there will be for sure, but in the future, but as the first mover advantage, we had already months of research done on not exclusively free, but very specifically the whole market of liquidity provisioning for AMMs.
So, like, yeah, you're talking about, you know, like the whole system of finance, and that's really good. So are you, you know, thinking about bi-directional strategies in there as like a service Popsicle could offer in the future? You know, like, would you hedge short on a central exchange or something like that so that the users still capture value?
Yeah, so I can tell you a little bit what is my vision for Popsicle Finance. Like, I imagine that the user has every user has a portfolio, right? So let's say that let's take as an example my portfolio. So I have I have Alchemix, I have ETH, I have WBTC, I have ICE, of course, I have Spell, of course. They have a lot of other stuff. Then what I envision is that the user or me go to Popsicle Finance and connects his wallet. This is how I imagine the user experience. And that's what actually how we are working on it. And this is coming in the next weeks. So when I connect my wallet, basically I'm giving also signature access to know what is my assets, what are my assets. We look and pull these assets from your MetaMask, and we see what you have, right? And we propose the strategy based on what you have, because we can make an assumption that if you have like a 30% of your portfolio in ETH, at the moment you are long ETH, right? If you have 10% of your portfolio in Alchemix, then you're long Alchemix, right? Or you're long Bitcoin and so on. Then you happen to have, for example, 50% of your portfolio in USDT, in Tethers. And the complex, the total amount of all of this builds up into what is your opinion on the market at the moment. Do you follow me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's, you know, how it should be done, because we're really limited, you know, in the DeFi world in terms of, you know, having delta neutral or bidirectional strategies.
Yeah. So then in this, what we see is that we create this opinion, and probably in the future, I would love to implement even AI and more complex stuff, but we implement this opinion and we flag our strategy depending on what type of opinion this strategy assume. And we want to propose on top of the UI, what are the strategies or the LPs and the things that you should consider allocating into, because they would maintain your exposure in the way that you want it to be, but at the same time, they would optimize that exposure. I give you an example. An ETH USDT LP on Uniswap V3 from last year to now would have outperformed long ETH. And let's assume that you have like 10% in stables and you have like 20% in ETH. Popsicle Finance has to propose to you a strategy that says, this is the EMA 20 strategy for ETH stables. So this outperforms, your holding has outperformed historically, holding ETH and stable in the same wallet. So would you like to allocate a percentage of your portfolio or a percentage of your stables and ETH to this strategy? This is how I envision. This is how it should be. It should be smarter than traditional finance. These things are already in traditional finance. We need to start building things that can overcome traditional finance. They need to be fucking better, you know? Like, right now, our stuff sucks, to be honest. In front of, like, let's be realistic, right?
Put it
like,
on blast, Danny.
Like, it's true, dude. Like, our stuff sucks in front of Revolut. Let's be realistic. Like, all these fintech companies out there, they're doing cool shit. We need to beat them. Like, if not just on money that you can make, because right now people coming to our ecosystem just because they want to be rich and they want to be rich now. Mm-hmm. That is the reality of things. Like, there is very few people that wake up in the morning today and they say, oh, I love decentralization. I think that the world should be bankless and okay, I'm going to ape in OM. Like, that's kind of like a long shot, right? Like, I don't think that it happens every day. So we need to try to make applications, the application layer of DeFi, much, much, much smarter and better, and allow these users that are already in DeFi or the users that are coming towards to just simply reply to questions or just pull out their opinion based on what they have done historically, right? And propose how to better optimize their opportunities across DeFi.
Right. Before I get into all that geniusness, I just want to say I've never been so bullish on my portfolio before, knowing that I hold many of the same bags as Danny. Guys, I just might make it after all. But no, I 100% agree with you. I think that's a really fucking cool vision, especially in the way that, you know, and I think it goes back to your earlier point about making DeFi easier and easier to onboard. It seems like such a better way to educate people to be like, hey, you want this and you want this and you have this and you have this. This is what you can do to optimize it. And this is why it optimizes it, right? Because it gives you this long opportunity and at the same time it hedges you in this way and it's performed better in these ways. That's really fucking cool. And I think you've already started to go into it, but yesterday you tweeted about Popsicle V2 and, you know, everything you were saying and what you just said has been really interesting and ambitious. Can you talk more about what V2 will bring and are these ideas what you're building for V2?
Yeah. So, of course, it's the first iteration of it. But the UI shows you the opportunity based on your portfolio. It also allows the community to vote opportunities that are most interesting for the community. So we are implementing this logic just like any other application to bring the standard of Popsicle to the standard of Silicon Valley high level startups or high level companies like Apple, etc., in which we want to make it very clear in the UI with like emojis, you know, all this stuff that people like, and make it very easy to figure out that something is, for example, trending as a strategy or something else is more loved by the community. And I think a lot of information like DeFi is busy because DeFi is built by people that usually code and look at a lot of stuff. And for them, like look at Curve, for example, is amazing, but there is a lot of information going on there, you know? Like the average user doesn't need all of that information. And we worked a lot on taking out all the unnecessary bullshit to make it super, super clear what is going on there. Like and make decision making, the process of decision making as easy as possible. Because at the end of the day, like, what you're doing is a money decision, and you need to make it very simple to take this decision, giving straight away the information that you really need and you really care about. Then right after, you can deep dive into why this strategy is good for you, or how does it help your portfolio to perform better against what has been doing or performing in the last month, for example. And all these things are coming in the iteration of 2.1, 2.2, 2.3, right? In which we build these analytics or additional layers on top of the decision making that helps create this trust and create this this beautiful product that is Popsicle.
So this is a lot of really cool stuff, a lot in the pipeline, it sounds like. Is this a long way off? Are we talking like 2022? Or we might be in a double bubble scenario right now, depending on who you ask. Are you going to have this stuff released, you know, while there's still FOMO and everything's going up?
So the first iteration of V2, that is going to be a lot of improvements, UI, decision-making improvements, all this is coming out as soon as we have the security clearance for launching Fragola and Sorbetto. So it's coming in the next weeks. We're not talking about months. And in the meantime, we're already building all the rest. So I want this shit to be out by the end of the year. I don't want to take everything. Like, I want everything to be dope as fuck by the end of the year. If not, I fail. Like,
yeah, I like that.
You're a fucking maniac, man. I love it.
Like, I hate all these fucking VC-backed San Francisco-style startups that say, yeah, we're going to do shit in 2023, and we're going to dominate the world in 2075. You should give me another $25 million for my fucking analytics shitty page. Because in the future, it's going to look nice, you know?
You know, I think Young Capital just got sent that exact proposal, word for word. It's kind of funny that you know that.
We're coming 2075.
Domination.
Yeah, world domination, sir.
No, I mean, I just think you dropped a shit ton of alpha there. And all that sounds fucking incredible. I almost don't want to leave Popsicle because of all of this awesome shit. But at the same time, you have a whole nother protocol, and it's equally got some awesome shit going on. So let's switch gears to Abracadabra here. As I understand it, it's basically a protocol that allows you to use yield bearing tokens such as like YVETH, YVUSD, even XSUSHI as collateral to mint this USD peg stablecoin MIM, which fucking wonderfully stands for Magic Internet Money, which I love using that meme. And this MIM could be used to like yun into things. It can use to be lever up on your Y tokens, a little bit of both. Then to unwind, you just pay back your debt plus interest, which usually the interest hovers around like 1% to 2%. Can you talk more about Abracadabra? Is this a good description? Can you tell us more about all it can do?
Yeah, today I feel like I'm in the Vision. I'm going to drop a lot of alpha on Visions, I guess.
Yes.
So how do you build the best stablecoin, right? Like, this is what I was considering in the moment in which I was thinking about Abracadabra. And then I felt like we had only one stablecoin at the moment, at the time, that was DAI. And I was looking at DAI, and there was always more and more USDC locked and more. And I was feeling like, oh shit, I mean, our beautiful ecosystem of DeFi does not deserve to be treated like this. Like, I want to know if something is decentralized for real or not. Or at least I want to have the chance of people deciding really, truly how composed the stablecoin should be, and not by venture capitals. And the same guys that in 2008 were selling the shit and destroyed the world economy are the same guys that are doing this kind of things in DeFi. Don't you think that they changed? Like, they all ex Goldman Sachs, all the Lehman,
right?
It's the same dudes. I mean, how do they have money? Fair. Somebody needs to make that question, right? And I was making myself that question. I was like, well, how do I build the best stablecoin? And first, I looked into what the market needs, and the market at that moment, especially now, needs to lever up. Like, it needs leverage, a lot of leverage, especially in stablecoins, because the yields are suck. Like, we are not last year anymore, where I could brrr money out of the window and just sleep. Now it's not working like that anymore. So I needed to figure out a way to do that, to make sure that also the small guy, which is not the whale that puts 40 million into a yearn vault USDT and doesn't give a fuck because 6% of 40 million is more than enough for paying his yacht, right? Like, the small guy doesn't have that opportunity to grow without taking high risks. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I care about a lot, and you know that. And I discuss this a lot. So first, accessibility. I wanted the small guy to be able to have yields on non-directional bets. Secondly, I wanted to make a system that is fun, engaging, and because I think that the meme culture is what is gonna take over. So the stablecoin of the future needs to be something that connects with the generation of the future. So I wanted it to be fun, engaging, and nice, and have a good name and have a good branding that can scale into the next phase of the internet era. The lever up is interesting because for making this CDP-based stable coins, what you need is collaterals that are valuable, but at the same time, you need also stability. And the stability MakerDAO has achieved it, unfortunately, with USDC. I thought that, yeah, that is a good way to have a part of the collateral of the stablecoin being stablecoins that are centralized, but it shouldn't be. But how do I make sure that at least the first phase, that is till now, because now we're going to the second phase of Abracadabra. So the first phase was, let's give people yield. Let's allow them to loop in. Let's allow them to create this massive amount of collateralization out of these stable coins, yearn vaults, that creates the core of the meme. Like saying, like, okay, and this needs to be completely open to people to decide what they want. So they want USDC, they want USDT, it doesn't matter, right? So I don't enforce that it's just USDC like in MakerDAO. I wanted it to be open, but still I wanted the same security on the peg that this allows. And additionally, even more secure because realistically, we have a lower collateralization ratio than the 99% to DAI that USDC has, so we have a 95%, but it's growing value collateral. So in reality, it's growing over time, and it creates even a stronger fundamental base core for the peg of meme. Because the more you loop, some people might think like, you idiot Daniele, they're going to loop like crazy, and then they're going to depeg. Yeah, but sir, like, the more they're going to loop, are you going to tell me that the coin that has $1 billion of yearn vault to USDC and USDT as collateral and minted 900 millions worth of meme, are you telling me that meme is not worth $1? Mm. Right?
Right.
Like the more...
And it's productive.
It's productive, exactly. So it's even more valuable, right? And it really represents that. That is like the first core. Then what you need is to open up this opportunity to more to more collaterals. Like for example, Yearn Vault ETH or Staked ETH in the future, or SOM, and we're going to talk about that later. But that is like the first thing that you need to do, because I think DAI is great, but we can make a better DAI. Then the other thing that I was thinking about is that MakerDAO, and it's too opinionated. Like, I don't like big opinions. I like openness. So I do not think that the future relies just exclusively on one chain. We are moving towards a community-based approach, and a lot of communities exist outside of the Ethereum community. And I think that the true stablecoin needs to be multi-chain. So the design of Abracadabra, by definition, is multi-chain. And that's why it's so interesting, because it can take collaterals, so interest-bearing tokens, natively on other native chains and still maintain this cross-chain nature. So unopinionated cross-chain nature, and build up as other chains build up, having the right collaterals representing really the core of the world cryptocurrency market, and not just one potential threat like that can happen, just a single point of failure in one chain. I want to have multiple chains to create this basket, beautiful basket of collateralization that represents the opinions of everyone. Because this is magic internet money, which, if it wants to be the stablecoin of the future, needs to look into the future, needs to include everyone. Like, it doesn't need to just allow the big guy to be there. It needs to allow also the Phantom guy, the Polygon guy, the BSC guy, and whatever, Avalanche. I'm not a huge fan, but whatever. It doesn't matter. You know, like, I don't care. I will do it, you know? And right. Whatever it will be, we will be. And the market will decide by itself if it's worth having collateral on AVAX rather than on BSC or on Polygon or on Ethereum or whatever. Because the market always, at the end of the day, is right. So this is how I felt like the stablecoin of the future should have been designed. And then while I was thinking about it, I was like, fuck, seems like I need to do it because nobody's doing it.
So that was really great background. Definitely really good about like the ethos and where Abracadabra and magic internet money came from. But I do actually think maybe right now is the time to talk about SOM and the Abracadabra cauldrons. Because, you know, so now we know the ethos. Maybe you can walk us through an example of how you would use Abracadabra and how you're planning to integrate OHM, so we can use that as the example.
Yeah. So staked OHM, for our listener who doesn't know, staked OHM is the staked token of Olympus DAO, which is a project on Ethereum. Staked OHM is a very good example of the power of Abracadabra, because staked OHM is a very, like a saying that is an interest-bearing asset, is almost like, it's a lot of interest, very big interest-bearing asset, I would say, a lot of interest. Like, it has a massive, massive interest.
Yes.
And it's
more it's than the, one way.
Yeah, let's say that is the most degen interest-bearing asset out there, with a market cap that is sizable enough to make it count, you know. And and this asset is a constant, and it rebases. Now, what is interesting about this is that the community, when this asset goes down or in certain moment, might want to lever up the risk a little bit, and Abracadabra provides this opportunity. So you could put the collateralization ratio on Abracadabra in one click of like 25%, and you could level up lever up that 25% and go 2x or 1.5x your staked home yields. So it might actually provide a better and stronger defense against the inflation, right? Because you actually have more than what you paid for, right? And this what it does is that it allows you to borrow meme, and automatically the system buys the SHOM and puts them back into the cauldron, into the market. So the cool thing about this is that we don't actually do loops. We do very more similar to a flash loan. So it borrows more, it goes to swap, and it puts back. So all in one transaction is super gas efficient, is super simple, and it's very unique to this protocol, because allows for a lot of other cool stuff. Like, for example, my proposal on sushi margin trading that is coming in the next couple of weeks maximum. We're going to allow margin trading on any pair, so degens can really go degen, but not with the, of course, this is, we can talk about this later, but in the point of SHOM is that there is this high inflation, and the price, of course, it tends to go down. So via leveraging up, you can edge that a little bit. And I am a fan of the team and the guys there at Olympus DAO. I think that the community is everything, and I was willing to support this. And it's live. By the time that you will listen to this podcast, it's going to be live, unless something happens to me. But
Jesus.
Yeah, I think you're right. The OHM community is, you know, they're great, and they're really, really dedicated to the project. And everyone always wants more. So this does seem like a win-win from that perspective. But I think it also, you know, abracadabra, you know, has a lot of, you know, exposure from people who already like Popsicle. But, you know, market caps, you know, under 40 million still, I think, you know, it is under the radar, you know, so having the rabid OHM community learn about abracadabra is probably going to have very interesting results. So I'm looking forward to that. But you mentioned something in there that I was going to bring up anyways, which was that, you know, any altcoin leverage that you can get through Kashi, and that's coming soon. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so going back to the perfect stablecoin kind of situation, right? The stablecoin, to be a real stablecoin and not just representing debt, needs to have usage, true usage in the ecosystem. And I talked a lot about the selling pressure that this meme gets against the curve pools and against the market, and how not scalable that is, till I figure out the solution to make meme that is minted out there integral part of the ecosystem out there. So the idea here was that we are going to abracadabra has purchased a full license from Boring Crypto for using Kashi, which right now is licensed by Sushi and Abracadabra. And the idea there was that we can deploy Kashi markets against the meme. And the meme, the situation right now with Kashi, I will make a little bit of a step back because I'm going too fast. And it's quite complicated. So right now, Kashi, I think, is the best lending protocol out there. It's segregated lending. It allows you to do any type of pairs. It has no fixed interest. The interest is flexible, and it automatically adjusts. It's very easy to implement oracles on it and everything. So it's fantastic. But the problem is that there is no liquidity. Why there is no liquidity? Well, I think it's very straightforward. Nobody wants to be the first guy to give liquidity to a single market, because the markets are so fractionated. I don't know, this is very Italian English, but whatever. Because of the reason that there is so many markets, the average user does not know where to put their money, and it potentially can stay locked in of that money because everything 100% gets poured into the market. So it didn't get traction. Now, on the other hand, we come out with meme. So the solution to this was that arbitrage is one of the reasons why DAI gets minted. And we need to create the same reason for meme. And the reason is to structure markets that allow unique opportunities like margin trading for altcoins that allow borrowable meme from the community. So what happens is that I contacted the Yearn guys, of course, and I said to them, we need a Kashi strategy. Why do we need a Kashi strategy? Is because right now you're not going to provide any liquidity to Kashi, but very likely you're going to have the opportunity to provide liquidity to Meme, because we can use that same Kashi strategy to split the liquidity across the best pairs that are outperforming. And the liquidity on Meme is easy to get because there is an arbitrage opportunity from people that can mint, for example, Meme out of their Yearn Vault ETH and put this Meme to work into Yearn Vault Meme that is going to get high interest, because everybody knows that people is willing to pay good amount of interest for leveraging their shit coins.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this, you know, because that's part of what we have DeFi for, right, is that anyone should be able to do this. But, you know, all the centralized exchanges, you know, don't want Americans trading. They don't want Canadians. They're moving away from Europeans. But, you know, that's the point of being decentralized. If I want to long, you know, margin long some shitcoin and at the risk of it going to zero, I want to do it. And, you know, I don't need the United States government protecting me from it. I know what I'm doing.
So, do you, Seth? Do you know what you're doing?
I know how to lose money, and I'm comfortable with the losing money. So, like, I have that handled. Leave me alone, please. Right. So, I do like this, and I am looking forward to it. And we'll just see if it gets Sushi in trouble.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to get Sushi in trouble for the reason that the markets are deployed on Abracadabra. They can come to ask me what I think about the U.S. government.
What do you think about the U.S. government?
Yeah, I'm not going to disclose this, but it's very similar to the Bitcoin tattoo.
Yeah, yeah. Show them your tattoo.
Actually, so one of the other developers I'm a big fan of, Do Kwon of the Terra Foundation, he has a similar stance. He's in Korea. And his approach is basically like, they can come lock me up, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, the point is that I really love DYDX, by the way. Like, I fucking love DYDX. But the reason that if you're American, you can't use it, like, I'm not American, I'm an Italian. Like, but doesn't matter. I care about, I know there is people that want to do what they fucking want with their money. They should be able to do it. Do you want to ape in Elon shitcoin and want to go 10x, we're going to make it happen, sir. Like, why not?
Yeah, I mean, that is the ethos of DeFi, right? That it is decentralized, that people can do what they want, that we give people financial freedom. And, you know, on the flip side, that does come financial freedom with being able to do crazy ape shit. And it also is financial freedom of being able to lever up on stables so that you get a safe return that you wouldn't be able to get in the traditional finance world, you know? So it's, I see it as both sides of the coin, and both are necessary. And it's really cool that you are trying to build both, from what I see. But unfortunately, I could talk to you all day here, but we are running a little low on time. And I want to get your ideas about general DeFi and markets right now. How do you see the DeFi space growing and developing moving forward? I think you have one of the most ambitious minds in crypto, one of the most degen minds in crypto too, which is just as good. So I'd love to hear what ideas and protocols are really exciting you right now.
Well, so options. You know, guys, I'm a fan of options. Like I looked at the Robinhood revenues, and crypto was on top, but by a little bit in front of options. And I think that the Generation Z is so interesting because they basically YouTube how to trade options, and they get like a 19 years old dude that it explains them in their own way this option stuff, and they go into Robinhood and they ape in. Like, I love that shit. Like, I think this is really the perfect tool for crypto. And I'm really bullish on options, and I'm really bullish on layer two, especially ZK rollups more than, and here a lot of people might be like, but optimism, but Arbitrum, they're going to win. I don't think that interactions between protocols are the thing. Like, I don't think that having a lot of protocols on a layer two does make a lot of interesting stuff. Like, I don't know about that. I think that user experience is what wins, and I think ZK rollups has the best user experience. So you can do it right now on DYDX, and in one click you're in. You are basically in a centralized exchange that is not centralized. In one click you deposited, you're trading derivatives. It's sick. Like, I don't need something else. I need the platform of options that does the freaking same, and it doesn't ask me the KYC, doesn't ask me where my money comes from. That is my freaking business, and that's where I'm really, really bullish about in DeFi, and I hope somebody's going to build it. If not, I'm going to build it, like, as you know. Like,
yeah. I believe
so. Really quickly, because I was reading that Twitter thread that you told us about right before we started recording this podcast, and I think it's actually incredibly interesting, and I sort of lost track of everything that we've talked about so far, but I did want to ask you about that. The Spell LP call options. Could you like quickly give us a little overview of that?
Yeah, so I was talking with Andre at a certain point, and he's like, what do you think about options as rewards? And I'm like, oh shit. And I'm like, how do we do that? And he has his own contract, but of course I'm going to, you know how I am. I kind of change it a little bit. Like, the way that he thought about it is one way. I thought about it a little different way. So the idea here is, how do we align incentives in between the liquidity provider, farmers, the spell holders, and altogether everything that the spell ecosystem needs, right? And this is very, very complex stuff. And I don't think there is a 100% certain answer, but I really like the idea of options, call options. So how does this work? Like, let's say that right now we're giving 100 spell to an LP of spell ETH per week, let's say. Now, this spell, some of these LPs are going to dump it for sure. Others are going to keep it because they think that the value is undervalued. So the people that are going to keep them are the ones that are bullish on spell. The people that are going to sell them are the ones that are not bullish on spell, right? It's very simple, this can. Options are opinions. I don't even call them options. Like, I think that when I explain to my friends or whoever wants to trade options, I say options is like an opinion, and an opinion in which you can pay money and you can win big or lose some money, right? So what I wanted to give to these people is opinions. Instead of just giving them spell, I want to give them the opportunity to decide if this the spell is going to be higher than a certain value or not in 1 month. And this is, of course, tradable and everything. And this really helps reducing the selling pressure. How? Like, let's say that now the TWAP of last week of spell is like 0.0005 cents. Now, I'm going to drop now, for example, all this options instead of 30% of the spell rewards that LPs are getting now. Interesting fact is that now they need to make a choice. Are they going to sell this option? Because they think that in 1 month or in 1 week or whatever, the spell price is going to be lower than the strike that they give them. Or are they going to hold into these options and they're going to claim the difference between the strike and the price at one at expiration and make money out of it? Another interesting part here is that effectively from 0 to 0.0005, that amount of value is, yes, collateralized, but at the same time, is not going to be dumped right now. So we are giving opportunity to have almost an infinite amount of value that can go up and up and up. But not only that, we are maintaining some of the treasury in our hands. I think you follow me here, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And this part of treasury is, yes, used potentially to compensate the margin that is done there in the price range that from the strike to the potential upside, but is also there to do another beautiful things. Help the S spell stakers to earn more money. Because if the strike price is lower than, if the price at expiration is lower than the strike price, then no spell are distributed to the LPs. So they can't dump further. Instead, we are giving spell to S spell stakers because they have potentially lost money in that time period. And effectively, in some way, we are creating an opinion, a very strong opinion of the project, saying like, this is the reason it exists, a bottom to this. And this bottom is the willingness of buying or selling these options. And it creates a really interesting dynamic in which we reduced effectively the selling pressure. Now, we didn't reduce the potential upside to the LPers that really want to, they're LPing because they're accumulating spell. And we hired the amount of value that it exists into S spell as a token. Because now, right now, it's not yielding that much, of course, because we are at the beginning of the protocol and that is still yielding money, but not an incredible amount. So the overall thing, I think, is super, super cool.
That is, yeah. Crazy. I mean, we look for new things coming out in DeFi all the time and, you know, often it's just a slight improvement on something else. But this is for sure on top of the rest of the stuff that Abracadabra is doing that's innovative. This is just so cool. And I'm very happy to have this massive alpha drop on the Goodwill Yunting podcast. So thank you for that.
Honestly, Denny, you might get the crown of a developer who's dropped the most alpha so far and that's a high bar because we've had some serious fucking alpha dropped on this podcast, but I feel like today it's just been one piece after another.
thank you sir.
No, awesome stuff. But yes, unfortunately we are getting close to the end and I don't think my brain could physically take any more exciting ideas. I think it might just break forever. So to avoid that, let's talk about the markets. So basically, it's tradition at this point to ask our guests about the markets because it's been such a crazy time since we started this podcast. NFTs are going crazy right now. People are speculating if this is a double bubble, if it's a bull, it's a bear. DeFi has been lagging a bit, but is starting to pick back up again. Do you have any thoughts about where we are right now? Do you care about it as a developer, as a speculator?
Yeah, so I care about trends. Like in general, I think we are going to, the NFT trend is going to expire, but it's not that we don't have a new trend. Like we had DeFi as a trend, we have NFTs as a trend, and I think the next big trend is DAOs. Like decentralized autonomous organizations. I think that is really big thing. And you can see it in the Bit token sale that has been so successful. I have full disclosure. I have Bit. I have been pretty big in that token sale. But I think that the trend will continue. I have 7,000 Ethereum December 21 call options signed quite a while, signed probably 6 or 7 months ago. So I bought them pretty well. I think that we are keep going into this macro cycle kind of trending, and we will see after the DAO trend what else pops out. Probably the layer 2 trend, and then we're gonna find the top. For now, I'm not like a guy that says, "Oh, it's a super cycle." It's always a super cycle. Like they keep printing money. Like the value is gonna go up of everything. Relative to the value of the US dollar, everything is a super cycle.
That is true. It's hard to argue with that. It's good to hear that you think DAOs are the next big thing, because little alpha to leak from our end, Yunt Capital is a DAO. So
I'm not sure that's alpha at this point.
Yeah, I think everyone knows. And you also...
I didn't know, sir.
See, it is alpha.
That's good.
You just drop some alpha now. I don't know. I don't have enough money to go long everything, sirs. So you're making me ape. What I'm going to sell now for getting some of that shit?
I don't know if you can long Yunt Capital.
Yeah, well, you can long the things that we invest in. How about that?
Oh, God, please don't tell people to do that, Seth. I don't want that on my conscience.
Yeah, I will go as far as saying go long things that Yunt Capital buys on Abracadabra 10x.
Okay, fuck. I'm going to have to edit all this shit out.
Leave it in.
This is actually, you want to laugh? Do you want to laugh? I am actually a recognized financial advisor in Switzerland. So we can actually say this shit, which is idiotic. So do not take, I was joking, do not take my financial advice. I'm an idiot with 69 IQ. I just got lucky on Second Life with Bitcoin, so you can't take me as an example.
Why in Switzerland, though, bro?
So the rest of the world can't get them.
Was either Switzerland or Belize.
Belize. I love it. Oh, God, I love it.
I think that's probably the best high we're ever going to have to end a podcast on.
I think so as well. Danny, it has been an absolute pleasure, as always, talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a blast.
It really has. Thank you, man.
Thank you, sirs. It's always a pleasure to talk with you guys, and up only.
Up only. Do you want to shill yourself, your Twitter, any projects you're working on, anything you want our sweet, sweet degens out there to know?
Well, I think we have talked enough about all my stuff. I suggest to people to go check out Olympus DAO and look at our cauldrons on SOM.
Sweet. And I will plug your Twitter, because I think it's such a great Twitter. Definitely follow it. He's at Dan. I don't want to spell it all. Just go follow his Twitter. Go do your own research. Find his Twitter.
We'll figure it out. You figure it out. That's why I didn't want to say my tweet, because if I say it in my Italian, nobody's going to understand anyway, but it's Daniele Sesta.
Can you say abracadabra one more time for the listeners at home?
Abracadabra.
Ah, oh, it's beautiful. It's music to my ears. Oh, one last. What was that?
I say bidibi bodibi boo.
One last final question before we leave here. Italian food, it's the best food in every way. Yes.
I mean, are you even asking this? What is this question? It's no question. Italian food is the best in the fucking world. I mean.
And that is financial advice. Go eat some fucking Italian food, you degens. All right. Thank you, everybody. Seth, do you want to shill yourself before we head out?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Seth. I'm the resident shit poster on Twitter. And you can find me at Ed Tweets Words on Twitter. And yeah, I post nothing of any use there. So follow me at your own peril.
All right. Thank you both so much again.
Thank you, guys.
And as always, you can find me on Twitter at @TheRogue_Uchiha. You can find Yunt Capital on Twitter at Yunt Capital. One quick disclaimer, nothing said on this podcast is advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or tokens. We may, and often because we're passionate about the projects we bring on, hold investments in the project. None of this is financial advice. Please, please do your own research. This is a risky field. And now, a message from our sponsor, Tequila Black. Have you ever had one of those trading nights where you just wish you could forget it? Luckily, Tequila Black can do just that. I had a trading night that, to be honest, I don't remember it anymore, but I know it's bad because a few days later I checked my balance and it was a hell of a lot less than when I started. And the reason I don't remember the trading night is because I drank some Tequila Black. What I didn't know, because I'm not smart enough to read the label, is that Tequila Black gets you blackout drunk every single time. In fact, I woke up in a cellar in Papua New Guinea, surrounded by 3 naked women and a lemur. I don't know how I got there, and for some reason, I am now banned from going to Singapore forever. And this is all because of Tequila Black. Let me tell you, I don't know for sure, but those were either the best 3 nights of my life or the absolute worst. The beauty of Tequila Black is you don't have to know. This product works, folks. Let me tell you, I don't remember a single thing, but the good news is I don't remember my bad trades either. I also found out I have a child on the way, as this was a couple months ago now. I don't know if it's mine for sure. She speaks very little English. But I'm going to drink some Tequila Black now and forget any of that even happened and that I just got that text message. Tequila Black, folks, you can order it online today. That was a message from our sponsor, Tequila Black. We will be back in 2 weeks for another amazing episode with a great guest. Thank you. As always, Yunt hard, Yunt fast, Yunt capital. Hey.